He was a hard-edged soldier from the American Revolution turned family man. Then in his 40s, his life takes an abrupt turn and he becomes a celibate Shaker. Northern Kentucky University Associate Professor of History and Geography Carol Medlicott's book, Issachar Bates, A Shaker's Journey, looks at how Bates became instrumental in Shakerism's westward expansion. Carol, good to see you.
Thank you.
How did you decide to write about the life and times of Issachar Bates?
Well, I really set out to try to tell the story of the expansion of Shakerism to the West. And for the Shakers, the West meant Ohio, Kentucky, and Indiana, so basically just west of the Appalachian Mountains. I'm a historical geographer, so what really drew me to work on the Shakers was looking at how they expanded across 1,000 miles of American territory in the early 19th century and how they made that work for them, how they managed to create a coherent culture across that 1,000-mile stretch of space. So I didn't really set out to write a biography, but I had discovered Issachar Bates through the music and the poetry that he wrote. I was singing with the Shaker singing group in New England before I came to Northern Kentucky University, and I discovered him there, and I realized quickly that he was one of the first Shakers sent beyond the Appalachian Mountains, and that he basically was everywhere all the time for 30 years. And so I realized that his life would be a good window through which to tell that story of Shaker expansion to the West.
Well, Bates doesn't sound like someone who would be a likely candidate to convert to Shakerism. He was a little bit rough around the edges from what I gather from your reading.
And he was.
He was a family man, and now all of a sudden he has to commit to the celibacy that's part of the Shakerism. Why did he become a Shaker?
Well, he had had a chance encounter with Ann Lee, who was regarded as the founder of Shakerism in America. And that encounter was in about 1782. It was in the town where he was living in western Massachusetts. And Ann Lee and some of her followers came through that town and preached, and he happened to be present at one episode of her preaching and was involved actually trying to protect her against a mob attack. So it made a very deep impression on him. He thought that her words were very penetrating and charismatic and that it spoke directly to him, and he never forgot that. At the time when he had that encounter, he was already married and was beginning to have a family, so he really felt that this lifestyle of basically leaving his family and going after Ann Lee, literally, was not something that he could do at the time, but he never really forgot about it. He entered sort of a period of midlife crisis in his late 30s, early 40s, and was really drawn to some kind of religious conversion. Of course, people in that time were more likely to interpret midlife crises of, you know, anxieties, depression, and so on, through a religious lens. So the fact that he had had that earlier encounter with Ann Lee drew him back to Shakerism, I think.
Was his family shocked by his decision
to
convert?
They were shocked. The people in his community were shocked. One thing that happened when he accepted the Shaker message was that he literally found his voice as a preacher. He had never had any inclination to be a preacher. He was a singer, and he was active in the local church as a choir master. But upon accepting the Shaker message, he suddenly found this voice as a preacher and became quite a charismatic preacher and would go around and preach to just anyone who would listen.
Did the Shakers recognize early on that he had a gift for preaching and
yes,
a talent for writing poetry and hymns?
They most definitely did. They recognized that he had this incredible gift for expressing the very complex ideas of the Shakers. And they sent him out right away into the frontier around where he was living, which was the southern Adirondacks. So they sent him out into the Adirondack region, into Vermont and adjacent New Hampshire, other parts of upstate New York. Between about 1801 and 1805, he was sent on several missionary journeys around that region.
What were the extent of his travels? He must have been all over the place. You said Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana, Adirondack. Sounds like a vast area.
Yes, he did. He covered a lot of ground. He was paired with another Shaker who also had a gift for preaching, a much younger man named Benjamin Seth Youngs. And the two of them made many, many journeys around Vermont and the Adirondacks, upstate New York, northern New England. And then they were selected and then joined by a third man to cross the Appalachian Mountains in early 1805. They were sent along the Wilderness Road through the Cumberland Gap, which was the same route that many were taking to come to this region. And they left in the middle of the winter on New Year's Day, 1805, and were given the instructions to basically find revival centers in Kentucky and see if anyone in that region might be receptive to their message.
I guess that was another one of Bates' virtues. He was a pretty hardy soul, wasn't he?
He was. He had done physical work all of his life. As a very young man, he worked as a hired hand He seemed to work as quite a bit as a woodsman, chopping down trees and handling logs and a lot of outdoor work. So he was in very good physical condition. Of course, he had been a soldier in the American Revolution, and he had withstood a lot of hardship during that time. So yes, he knew how to handle horses and guns and weapons and tools of all sorts. And I think that that was another reason that the Shakers were inclined to send him out preaching, because they knew that he was physically able to withstand the journeys.
He did this into, what, his 70s?
He was still active as a missionary on behalf of the Shakers well into his 70s. He was still being sent out to try to convert new audiences and minister to new converts when he was about 74, 75, 76 years old.
This wasn't all fun, though. There were a lot of hardships, I'm sure, that he had to face during those times. And wasn't there a case where he went to Indiana and they tried to run him out of Indiana?
He was threatened with violence on many occasions, and he generally could talk his way out of difficult situations because he was so adept at, he had learned to really deal with all sorts of people. He could pretty much speak to anyone on any level. He could use very bawdy speech and sort of appeal to the basic working man, but then he could also employ very sort of lofty phrases and lofty manners of speech and engage with much more elite and educated individuals. And so that gift of being able to react appropriately in any situation to any kind of person allowed him to talk his way out of many difficult situations. And yeah, there was a mob around Vincennes, Indiana, that tried to run him out of town and threatened to I think it was basically threatening to castrate him, things like that, and steal his horses, mutilate his horse. And basically, through sort of joking with them, he managed to talk down the mob and get them to all start laughing, and then they finally let him walk away.
He was good with words. There's a quote in your book where Bates says that he and his fellow Shaker missionaries are like God's hunters and went through this wild wooden world by day and night, hunting up every soul that God had been preparing for eternal life. He sounds like he's very committed to the cause. How successful were they in advancing Shakerism?
He was instrumental in establishing 7 communities west of the Appalachians. And of course, today, the community that most people in this region know about and have heard about is Pleasant Hill, because it's a lovely restored museum. But actually, they established 4 communities in Ohio. The largest community in the west was at Union Village, which is about 3 miles west of present-day Lebanon, Ohio. At its height, the community at Union Village was around 800 people or so. It's difficult to estimate what that population of Shakers would have been west of the Appalachians at its height, but it would have numbered in the low thousands at its height. The interesting thing about Ohio is that at the height of Shakerism in Ohio, there were more Shakers in Ohio than in any other state besides New York State, where they were founded. So Ohio really does rank quite prominent in the Shaker world, and much of that is due to Bates's efforts.
And how many hymns did he write for the Shakers? What was the most famous?
Oh, it's very difficult to count how many hymns he wrote. I've discovered and read and transcribed at least 100 or more.
Wow.
But then there are many, many more that he wrote that we don't have tunes for. So it's very difficult to estimate, because not all manuscripts survive, and it's almost impossible to read every existing Shaker music manuscript, and there are thousands of Shaker music manuscripts. So there are probably hundreds of hymns attributed to him.
What would you say his place is going to be in the history of the Shaker movement? How crucial and how vital was he?
Well, he was regarded by the Shakers as one of their most vital early frontier figures. He's really remembered for that. His autobiography that he wrote in the early 1830s was copied by the Shakers throughout the 19th century, really more than any autobiography of any other Shaker. For the Shaker movement, Issachar Bates really symbolized that frontier spirit, that westward-moving impulse. And Ann Lee had prophesied that Shakerism would move to the West. So for the Shakers, Issachar Bates's life and work really encapsulates that. And the fact that he was such an adventurous soul and such a bold individual and very non-Shaker in many ways. He was very vulgar and told dirty jokes and dirty stories. And so he was a source of great entertainment for later generations of Shakers because he had done so much for the movement, but yet was so very much unlike the kind of man that typically rose through the ranks of Shakerism to leadership positions. So I think it's fair to say that he does loom very large, especially during the first third of the 19th century. But then he also brought into the Shaker movement with him a large train of extended family who also became Shakers, and many of them were very, very prominent and famous Shakers in their own right. Issachar's youngest daughter, Betsy Bates, ultimately became the lead eldress of the Mount Lebanon ministry, so technically she was a successor of Ann Lee by the time she reached middle age in the 1850s. So many of his children and extended family also became very prominent Shakers, and so I think that helps to sort of contribute to the legacy that he leaves to the movement, that not only were his own actions instrumental, but the actions of his family members were also instrumental in giving shape to Shakerism.
Carol, thank you for joining us this evening.
Thank you very much, Mark.
Carol Medlicott is an associate professor of history and geography at Northern Kentucky University. Her new book is Issachar Bates, A Shaker's Journey. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Mark Haney.
Liberty is but a sound if the conscience still is bound. Now we mean to let you know we've not treated freedom so. Since God's kingdom is coming, we find freedom from our sin. O ye priest-bound souls, come out, help us raise the living shout. Never heed your former stuff, you have proved it long enough. God through Mother we adore, hate the flesh and sin no more.